Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Like you said, I'm from Oklahoma State University, and I have to tell you, when I got out of the taxi yesterday over at the Marriott, I saw a red pickup coming at me. It had an Ole Miss license plate on the front of it, and I thought he was going to run me over, but then he just blew right by untouched, and just like Ole Miss did Oklahoma State in the Cotton Bowl, pretty much. So I had to relive that again. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk a little bit about the current and future opportunities for precision ag, specifically related to cotton. And I guess some of the things that I want to think about first is, let's think about management scale and where we are in precision agriculture. Precision ag technologies really just offer us the opportunity to manage at a finer scale without sacrificing the capacities of the bigger equipment. You know, we spent the last century increasing the capacity of our equipment because we now are farming, more land with fewer people, and the productivity that we have in our equipment is pretty impressive. And so we can't give that up. And so if you think about management scale, as we start moving to even managing our fields individually different, I think there's a lot of opportunity for some return there. And I apologize to any economists in the lab or that are here to see this, because there's no dollars on this. Conceptually, though, if we take it and manage at a subfield level, there's a potential for some more return there. And even if we go at, like some of the folks at Oklahoma State have been trying to do, go to a sub-meter level, there's a little bit more there, I think, but it's diminishing. And so, but I think that sub-field level, there's a lot of opportunity right there initially. There is I want to talk about today, or I think in specifically in cotton, where we can work are kind of some zone management concepts. There's a whole session on nematodes later this afternoon if you want to get that. Some stuff about high zone syndrome that was initially proposed, I think, by Tim Sharp. But we'll talk about some remote sensing, some other sensor technology, and then some yield monitors. The things that aren't on this list, I think, are what we might call some of the automated technologies, auto guidance, I don't have on the list here. Automatic boom section control, I don't have on my list. Because those, to me, those are the things that are, they're like cruise control in your car. If, in fact, there's any benefit to be had from it, you push the button and it works. You push the button and it doesn't work, then you got to call somebody and they, or maybe figure out what's wrong with it. But the stuff that I'm going to talk about here pretty much are more of the data-intensive parts of the precision ag technologies, the management type of items. So if we think about zone management, our current status, you know, where we are, that management zones are just smaller areas of our fields that we're going to choose to manage independent of each other. Plans can change between zones. Zones can change between crops, between years. There's a lot of things you can use to determine what those zones are. Electrical conductivity, various machines I know in the Delta and the Southeast are used a lot. Remote images, yield history, landscape position. There's a lot of things I think you can draw management zones with. Sometimes you have, I guess the thing I think about with management zones is really it's a lot more art than it is science. I've got listed there some spatial statistics. If you really want to get into the science of management zones, you know, you can look at some exploratory data analysis. I read a paper on that the other day. Management Zone Analyst is a piece of software out of USDA up in Missouri that they've developed, and it's a great piece of software. It's not real user friendly, but if you want to get into the real analytical part of management zones, you can use those things. But to me, the management zones are more art than they are science. And so don't let anybody tell you that you can't draw, that you can't use something to create management zones. I mean, I tell guys all the time, I can draw management zones with a crayon. It's not rocket science. You try to pick areas of the field that are different and then isolate those. The things with drawing management zones, and what I'm showing here is just an electrical conductivity map of a field in southwest Oklahoma. The thing you want to get out of management zones is you want to divide the field into areas that are different from each other but similar within them. And so essentially, if you look at the statistics behind the science behind management zones, it's a matter of finding these little areas that are as uniform as possible within the area, but then that little zone being as different as possible than the other zones. And so that's basically what it is. So you can do that with a lot of different methods, and there's certainly a lot of people all over the crop production areas that are doing this now. I talked a little bit about the high zone syndrome a little bit, or this different management concept that, like I said, Tim Sharp and Ed Barnes and I think John Wilkerson at Tennessee were kind of working on. Now it's kind of a little bit more complex method of looking at management zones because you're using some yield history as well as some NDVI, some crop vigor information. And the blue squares going up through the blocks there would indicate where everything matches up. If I've got a low NDVI, I have a low yield. If I have a high NDVI, I have a high yield. But there's certainly areas of the field that don't match that little trend where you might have a really high NDVI and a low yield. So you've got a lot of, the NDVI would tell us that you've got a lot of plant growth, but not much yield. And so what you want to do and how you manage that is going to change. Where are we going to be in the future with management zones? I think we're going to see this. We're going to see maybe some more complex zones. I honestly think, if we look at precision agriculture and the way it's developed over the last 10, 15 years, it's kind of taken a couple different paths at most places, at least at most universities, depending on expertise. They either go to a real sensor-based system where we're doing sensors to make all of our crop measurements and help make our decisions, or you go to a complete map-based system where now we're going to collect some yield history, some soil tests, maybe some other zone-type deals, and everything's going to be based off of geographic data, whereas the sensor data doesn't need the geographic data to work. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see a fusion of those things. Basically, we know that specifically with corn, that the response to nitrogen varies as we go across the field. Some areas of the field are going to respond to nitrogen and some are not. And so those areas are going to respond differently. So the ability to look at that, and I think it comes back to that high zone syndrome where we talked about a little bit in cotton. You look at those areas, and if I can map those areas ahead of time and I know where they are, and now if I can take my sensor data and fuse it with that with the historical data that I have, the map-based data, I think that's where we're going to be in the future with some management zones. This is a map of a cornfield in eastern Oklahoma, where the light blue is historically high yielding, and the darker blue is lower yielding, and then the two strips that go across that are just NDVI measured. One of them on a nitrogen-rich strip. So it's got about 250 pounds of nitrogen out there on this corn, and the other has zero. And you can see that there's one area right there in the kind of the middle of the field where that real dark blue area is that the crop's not even responding to nitrogen. And so I don't think that in our current status with sensors that we're going to be able to pick that area up and make the right decision there. But if we know that the crop is unlikely to respond to it there ahead of time, and then have our sensors, I said, again, fusing those two things together, I think is going to give us a lot of opportunity to go to the next level in management zones. For remote sensing, I know that I'm going to make somebody mad right now, but a guy told me a long time ago as an extension specialist, if somebody's not mad at you, you're really not doing your job. It's kind of like marriage. But there's a few people of you listening. Remote sensing is initially very early on was going to be the savior of precision ag. We're going to do all this remote sensing stuff, and it's going to be great. And I could probably stand up here and name off the top of my head several companies that have been involved in remote sensing that are no longer involved in it at all. There's been some niche applications and some things have come along. Some of the challenges have been satellites, getting images when you want. If it's coming off of an airplane, the timing and getting those images. A lot of people get really hung up on the sunlight part of things. If you're taking an NDVI image, you're not going to get real calibrated numbers off of it unless you have targets on the ground that you know what the reflection of those are, because it's a passive using the solar radiation off of those. But cotton is the crop, I think, that's shown the most promise when you think about this. And certainly within the Delta and in the Southeast area, there's been more continuous work done in remote sensing and commercially available to producers than any other place in the country. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. Certainly in Oklahoma, we're going to be doing more remote sensing work in the future. Though I say, you know, I kind of bag on it a little bit. I think there's a lot of opportunities for remote sensing. Specifically, if we look at fields, the image on the left is an NDVI image, you know, remote sensed aerial image of a peanut field in Oklahoma, and the image on the right is just the infrared part of it. Now, I would say from the NDVI image, the magnitude of those numbers is not going to be ideal. In other words, if I get an NDVI of 0.75 on a part of the field, I'm not so sure that that's actually a 0.75 because the image is pretty much uncalibrated. But the big thing to me is I'm just looking, hey, where are the areas different? So now it's going to come back to this ground truthing. You have to come back and say, you know, what parts of the field are different, and those are the ones I want to look at. So I can use this for zones. I can use it to pick out areas of the field that may be responding differently to different inputs. So that's an important thing. And like I said, we're going to be doing certainly more of that in the future. Sensors, a couple different ways you can go with sensors. There's soil sensors and crop sensors. Crop sensors, essentially, at least right now, most of the stuff we're looking at is an NDVI. And basically, NDVI is strongly tied to biomass. Biomass is strongly tied to yield, really strongly tied to yield in most of our cereal crops, but we'll get to cotton in a little bit. Soil sensors, the soil EC sensor, the mobile sensor platform out of Veris Technologies that has the pH manager, the pH sensor on it, I think are some great opportunities. But I'm going to focus a little bit more on the crop sensor end of things. Your options are limited. There's basically three crop sensors available to us right now. They're all similar. They're active light sensors. So in other words, they're providing their own light source. And so by doing that, you can work at night, you can work in different, you know, cloud cover, and you get a true NDVI out of it. So you're getting calibrated numbers, and that's the important part of it. I think that what we have right now with the Green Seeker Group and Trimble, the industry alliances with Ag Leader and Holland Scientific, I think with those things, I think that's really going to help integrate these sensors into a lot of our precision ag systems. So I see that as a real benefit. But we are basically dealing with NDVI. The thing with NDVI is highly correlated, again, with plant biomass, which is crop yield, nitrogen, plant chlorophyll, water stress, plant diseases, insect damage, pretty much anything. But the challenging thing is you don't know which one it is. And so that's a problem, I think. And so there's ways to deal with it, primarily is through some ground truthing and some things along those lines. But with cotton, it's a little different. I had a guy tell me a long time ago that growing corn's like racing cars. You just put your foot in it and turn left. And cotton's a little different. So corn will continue to respond to nitrogen and water until sunlight and heat's limiting. And so, but cotton being an indeterminate, more biomass does not always translate into more yield. And so that kind of comes back to that high zone syndrome that I talked about just a little bit ago. So we need to know, you know, what we're trying to do there. We've got some sensor-based opportunities. In growth regulators, defoliants, nitrogen. I'll be honest with you, I think right now, at least within Oklahoma, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on in this conference later talking about nitrogen, we're struggling a little bit with the nitrogen on cotton simply because of the indeterminate nature of the thing. We have to be able to detect deficiencies and be able to respond to those. And so We're struggling with that right now. I think with the growth regulators and defoliants, we're doing a much better job with those, and I think we've got a lot more chance for success. You've got to have that prescription, and basically a couple graphs here with percent open bowls and height to node ratio versus NDVI based on a bunch of data that we've taken in Oklahoma. And yeah, there's a lot of scatter in the data, and there's a decent line going through it. But the challenge is, I think for us with sensors is we've got a sensor that measures NDVI, and I moved back to Oklahoma about 5 years ago and had all these Green Seeker sensors laying around, and I was like, okay, what can we do with these? And so I tell the guys all the time, when all you've got's a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And that's basically the way we've approached this. It's like we're using NDVI to be an indicator for some of these things, and it may not be the best one. So where are we going to be in the future with sensors? Other vegetative indices besides the NDVI, maybe looking at that red edge is going to be some things, I think, for cotton. Height sensors, we're looking at some height profiling sensors so we can actually look at the top of the plant and see what it looks like. There's work going on with quality sensors, you know, for cotton. Not specifically to cotton, but I've got in here nanotechnology. You read a lot about that. It's the big science thing now. And so maybe instead of the sensor, you know, on the sprayer, we put the sensor in the plant. And think about that. Now, I'm not the guy that's going to do that. I'm a gearhead kind of engineer, you know, duct tape and baling wire. But put the sensor in the plant. Now then, instead of the sensor on the sprayer telling you what's wrong, it'll be the plant telling you what's wrong. And until you forget when you planted it, and then it won't talk to you for a couple of weeks. If you don't know what's wrong, I'm not telling you. Moving on, I knew that one would work. Moving on, talking about yield mapping, I think we can map yields. And to me, this is an important thing. Yield mapping is specifically because yield is what we sell. We get paid for yield, and so this is the important thing. And the same thing on a quality end. I think we're looking at some quality sensor stuff going on. So I think we're going to be dealing with some identity preserve stuff and quality mapping in the future. A good publication on yield monitors by George Calvin and I can't read the other name on there right now, but there's certainly developed and worked on yield monitors a lot more than me. What are we going to use them for? Diagnosing production problems is the first thing, I think. If you get a yield map of a cotton field, the first thing you're going to learn is something that you probably already know. But the difference is now you're going to be able to quantify it. So we got a water problem on the lower end of this field. That's a 2008 yield map on the left, 2009 on the right. So certainly fixed a water problem. What did that mean? Quite a bit in yield, really. Took it from the lowest yielding part of the field to one of the higher. Those are normalized yield maps, so green is high yielding. The light green is at least 10% above average, and the red is at least 30% below average. So moved that part of the field quite a bit. Multi-year yield history. This is again another field from southwest Oklahoma. The bottom right map is an average yield over those 5 years. So I got 5 years of yield maps, and you average them. And certainly there are differences on those fields. The field is not the same every year, but if you look at that bottom right map, a couple areas, the southeast corner of the field and the northwest corner of the field are kind of shaking out a little bit different than the others. And within SST Toolbox, I went through their yield stability analysis and got the map on the left out of that. So it's like, well, it doesn't look very stable. Personally, I didn't like their methods that well, so I did my own yield stability analysis on it, and the map on the right would show that. And so that green area, essentially the yellow area I would call as average, which is most of the field. But that southeast corner, again, of the field is consistently high yielding. So I call that stable, higher yielding area. So I'm going to manage that different, most likely. The red area that's up in the northwest corner is consistently low yielding. So on-farm research is another thing I think yield monitors are good for. I'm a big fan of education. One of my all-time favorite bumper stickers says, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance for a while. I think a lot of us have been there. I know I have. So I think there's a lot of things we can do. Do your own research. Continue invest in your own operation and invest in your own knowledge and learning about your farm and what you're doing. I start to leave you with this. Mechanization of agriculture. I talked about the capacity of equipment and what we've got as far as productivity. Mechanization of agriculture was called one of the top 10 engineering achievements of the last century. And remember, in that century, we invented the computer and put a man on the moon. So you look at that. I think the incorporation of electronics and control systems in agriculture is going to be one of the next great levels that we get to. From agriculture and equipment, we had rubber tires on tractors, hydraulics, cabs. Those are all great achievements. To me, control systems and electronics are the next one. Come back to this. Think about management scale and where you want to try to be and work on that potential return. Remember, it's not an evolution. It's an evolution, not a revolution. It takes place over time. And there's a sign that always hung in the BAE lab at Oklahoma State when I was there that said, the actual is limited, but the possible is immense. And so I would encourage you to look at what you've got in precision agriculture, look at your operations, and set a direction for the future. And I'm counting down to 1 second left. I nailed that. Thank you.
Nobody else could do that.